That's our intro music, isn't it, Anthony?
Yeah, it's a good one.
Your mantra, maybe.
I love it.
So this is the second installment of our Heritage How-To's. It's a show by artisans, for artisans, explaining their craft so all the do-it-yourselfers out there can go and make food and products like America's leading artisans. Today on the show, we have Anthony Falco, the head pizzaiolo, pizza master, pizza maverick here at Roberta's, whose pizza is now reaching kind of standards of excellence that the New York Times gives 2 stars to. Anthony, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Tell us a little bit about your history and your relationship to pizza, what brought you to this position, and what kind of pizza you'll be explaining how to make.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a lifelong love affair with pizza. I grew up in Texas, and in a small, like, there was a Sicilian farming community there in Texas. Huh. And my great-grandmother was from Sicily. She used to make pizza at home. And so what I'm going to do is something I think it's going to be, like, more similar to that than what we do here. Pizza, like what we do at Roberta's, it's really tied to the heat source, the oven, Neapolitan style pizza, wood burning ovens. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to get a pizza stone or build a wood fired oven in your backyard or anything. It's a simple food. I mean, it's basically bread with stuff on it,
like a focaccia type derivative.
Yeah, like in Sicily it would be sfincioni, and it's, you know, like a bread flat, or you rise with the ingredients on it and, you know, cut it up usually square or something like that. But yeah, this is kind of a hybrid between the two that I'm going to teach everybody how to make. Hopefully they'll be making it at home.
So this is the kind of pizza that I can make for a hot day at home.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that where you could start in the morning or in the afternoon, and you could be eating it for lunch or dinner. Okay. That same day.
About how many hours should I prep my stuff before I want to be eating?
You should be prepared to, the proofing time is going to be about 7 to 8 hours, ideally. You can leave it in your refrigerator for 24 hours if you wanted. But the actual putting the pizza together and making it's probably like 15 minutes. It can be pretty quick.
Okay. So now you've executed this pizza at home, so you know this works.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and you've prepared like a recipe that we're going to attach to the site.
Yeah.
So that everyone at home can do this.
And pictures, so okay. You can see. You
cool, know. And I've seen the pictures, folks, and it turns out beautiful.
It was so, the first shot, too. First try.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to break the show up into different segments. We're going to talk about ingredients. We're going to talk about equipment. We're going to talk about preparation. So we're going to take a brief break here, and we'll be back with your ingredients and where to get them. That was The Age of Pampirius by Turbo Negro. And I think you've got a pretty good pizza. Wait till you try this one. All right, so Anthony, so assume that I'm your listener. Assume that I'm at home trying to make this pizza and I don't know anything. Tell me how I start, what kind of ingredients I collect, and where I get them.
Well, pizza is basically bread. It's a kind of bread. So bread is flour, water, salt, and a leavening agent. Flour, I recommend just a good bread flour. You don't need to go crazy. I mean, we use, in a lot of the more artisanal pizzerias, use a Caputo flour from Italy. It's great.
Bleached or?
Unbleached. That's the one thing I would definitely recommend is just, you know, go out of your way and get some unbleached flour, which is pretty common these days. Shouldn't be too hard to find some unbleached flour. But a good bread flour, I mean, you don't have to get a specifically pizza flour. like the Caputo 00 or anything like that. But if you can find, if you have one in your local store, yeah, sure. But
and there are different, there are different like classifications, like 00 and
it's
what are those? That's like the fineness of the
Yeah, it has to do with the way that it's the flour is ground.
Okay,
to a certain.
So you want a 00 unbleached.
Yeah, that would be ideal. I would actually, I mean, for like realistic, I don't want to put any impediments to someone actually going and doing this. Like, there shouldn't be any barriers. So just get good bread flour. King Arthur would work. I thought you guys
used King Arthur here for the bread.
We use Galahad for the bread here, which is a great bread flour. Highly recommend Sir Galahad.
Okay.
But I just used, for this recipe, the one that I made at home, I had some flour in, it was just, it's AP, all-purpose flour, unbleached, you know, white flour. It worked fine. So, yeah, that's the stressing out about, like, you know, having the finest ingredients and all this stuff. It's not really something, you know, I don't think people should stress too much about it. Just, you know, it's more important to get in there, start making it. And then
tweak it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah. All
right, so I got my flour. So, and again, this is to make one ball of dough for one pizza.
Yeah.
So alter the ingredients and the measurements, you know, accordingly. But, so I got my flour. What else do I need?
You need some water.
Okay, I can find that.
Yeah. Need good New York City tap water is great.
Now, let me interrupt you here. Is this a myth that it's the water in New York that makes the good pizza? I heard there was a blind tasting recently. And all the tasters pointed out that the New York pizza tasted the best and that the only ingredient that had been changed was the water. The water was the...
I don't think it's a myth. I think, you know, I think it does make a difference, the water that you use.
Why? It's cleaner or, like, what's in it?
Some mineral content. It's New York has great tap water. It's a very old, you know, system coming from the Catskills Mountains. It's, you know... It's good. New York has, from all the cities I've lived in, straight out of the tap, it's the best tap water you could just drink.
Which is great, because I can't even afford water, so.
Yeah. But if you can't, if you're questionable about your tap water or whatever, just some distilled water would probably work fine.
Okay. So what else? So we got our flour, we got our water, we need salt.
Salt, yeah. I always highly recommend using kosher salt or sea salt.
Okay.
That's... just makes a big difference in all cooking. I mean, if you have iodized Morton salt in your house, you should probably just throw it away, get some kosher salt. It's not expensive and it makes a huge difference.
All right.
And then the leavening agent, which you, if you have access to someone who has a sourdough starter and you can get that, that would be great. But for the, and that's in an ideal world, but this is the real world, and we are really going to make pizza, and you are
today
you are making pizza. And so just, I went down to the bodega and got some Fleischmann's active dry yeast in the packets to make this. Cost $1.50, and I used two packets, which was about 15 grams for this one ball.
So two packets per ball. So you're making three balls, six packets. So just do the math on your own, folks.
Yeah.
Okay. So talk to us about the sauce and the cheese.
Sauce, I'm a big believer in just getting some good canned tomatoes and not really messing with it much more than that. We here at Roberta's, we use Pilati, which is just like
peeled
tomatoes. And we... blend them with nice olive oil and some sea salt, and it's an uncooked sauce. It just goes right on there. We've got the high temperature going, which is really nice. You might want to cook your sauce at home because it's not as high a temperature. So, but regardless of whether you cook it or not, just drain the water that the it's in the can, and you'll get better results that way.
So now, do I want whole peeled tomatoes and I want to crush them with the oil, or like, how do I,
yeah,
do I put them in a blender?
I have an immersion blender at my house, which is what I used. It's like a little stick blender. That works great. You can just, if you want more of like a rustico kind of thing,
right,
you could do just hand crushed.
Right. Or like hand sliced sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Or knife sliced.
I don't ever like to use, and we, as a rule here at Roberta's, never cook with fresh tomatoes, because it's kind of our belief that if you get your hand on a actually fresh tomato in season, then all you want to do is slice it up and put some salt and pepper on it and eat it.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
So yeah, canned tomatoes are picked at the height of their freshness and canned, and that's a great way to go. I got a can at my bodega of San Marzano tomatoes for $2. It was a pretty big, hefty can. Could make enough sauce for 5-6 pizzas.
Okay. All right. So I drain it. I crush them a little, hand crush them for a rustic feel, maybe blend them with some oil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then talk to me about cheese. What to avoid first?
Well, I would not put cheese at all, as opposed to go get some Kraft mozzarella from shredded in a bag from your local store. If you're in the New York area, there's going to be a dairy provider around you that's going to have good fresh mozzarella for pretty good price.
Do you use mozzarella di bufala or?
You can. I'm pretty close to Raffetto's on Houston, and they have a great deal on Campanian mozzarella di bufala, which it's like $7.95 for a ball. You could probably get like, four pizzas out of it. But my grandma never actually put cheese on pizza. It was just sauce.
Some
and
Sicilian
vegetables.
Preparations don't. Right?
Yeah. Sauce, vegetables, meat, stuff, sardines, maybe something like that, anchovies.
Okay. So talk to me about toppings. So what are some of the toppings that someone could use, and how could that affect the prep? Like, what should they take into consideration if they want to do something a little more than just tomato and mozzarella?
Well, you should always consider what your topping is going to bring to the pizza, besides just the flavor alone. Like here at Roberta's, if you come in to order a pizza, you can order one of the pizzas we have in our menu, which are designed by us to be delicious, look good,
get out of
taste
town.
Good. Yeah. A lot of man hours go in there. Yeah. The R&D department here is just, it's big. But when pizza people come in, they can also design a pizza, have anything they want. And sometimes that causes problems because you don't take into consideration levels of moisture, levels of salt, things like that. So say you wanted to have a pizza with speck and Parmesan and, soprasada. And it's like you're kind of those three heavy salt components that you're all putting together. And it's going to, we had someone order pizza like that once and they were like, it was too salty. It's like, So, and moisture is a big one too. If you're going to have like extra sauce and ricotta and like pineapple and mushrooms, you have to think those mushrooms are going to release moisture. The ricotta is a very wet cheese. All these things are going to come together and you're going to get like a soupy kind of mess. So just consider the balance of the different toppings that you're going to want to put on there. And also, as a general rule of thumb, on the pizzas that I design, I try to limit myself to 5. That is like the top out of ingredients. I mean,
5 toppings.
Yeah. Like less is always better. Get zen on your pizza.
Okay.
Like, you don't even... one of my favorite pizzas doesn't even have sauce on it. It's just a little, just some cheese and mushroom onions.
Okay. So now if I'm using fresh vegetables like peppers and mushrooms and stuff like that, do I need to cook the mushrooms a little bit because I'm making this pizza at home first? Do I need to cook the peppers?
I would just put them on fresh. I mean, that's just me.
So the preheated oven will take care of those.
Oh, yeah, okay. Definitely. And, just consider with the way that you prep your vegetables, if you want them to have a more cooked texture when it comes out, you slice it thinner. If you want it to be more like that pepper, like a real juicy, like, fresh tasting pepper, then big chunks are going to work for you.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to consider the tools and the equipment part of the ingredients. So do you want like a scale, or can you use cups? You want a frying pan? What kind of frying pan?
A scale is ideal. Because I have a scale at my house, and it's comes in handy for all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's because you get an accurate measurement. When you put flour into a cup, you could pack that flour down, and it could come to a different weight. So I have the recipe I'm going to give you will give you cups to do. If you don't have a scale, and I'm going to give you like gram measurements in case you do have a scale, if you want to be a little more accurate, if you're going to be doing this on a regular basis and you want to kind of tweak the recipe as you go, it's good to know what you're tweaking first.
Weight-wise.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Okay, so now, and again, so that our listeners are clear on this, we're making a frying pan pizza. So Anthony says you don't need a pizza stone. All you need is a preheated oven. And what kind of frying pan?
Ideally, a steel frying pan or cast iron. You don't want to put a nonstick Teflon coated frying pan in your oven. It's not a really good idea. Those two work the best. Aluminum would probably work. It might be, I haven't tried it, so I can't really tell you how it would work, but I highly recommend just a nice like 8-10 inch steel skillet for this recipe.
Okay. All right, so we're going to go to a little break. We're going to go back to Turbo Negro, talking a little smack about pizza. And then Anthony's going to explain to you how to prepare the dough, how to execute the pizza from start to finish. You got all your ingredients in front of you. And in the next 15 minutes, you're going to know basically start to finish what to do with them.
Right on.
Anthony Falco, pizza making, Neapolitan hybrid, Roberta style, Neapolitan style, coming together in your frying pan, in your oven.
Oh, yeah.
So we got into the prep part. We got all our ingredients in front of us.
Let's get tell down me a little bit specifics.
About, yeah. Tell me a little bit about baker's math and how I'm going to prepare one ball for one pizza.
Okay. So what you want from your dough is a 60 to 65% hydration rate. And that sounds really fancy, but really all it means is that your flour is your 100%. This was designed by bakers so that they could give each other recipes and scale them, you know, which is what we're giving you here is one recipe for one ball. You can scale it, just multiply it, and you'll be able to get many. That just basically means the percentage.
What do you recommend for doing the math? An abacus or a calculator or
some just the smart kid in the back of the
okay.
Yeah, just all right. Grab him by the collar and make him do it for you.
Okay.
So 60 to 65% hydration rate. That would mean that your water would be 60 to 65% of the amount of flour that you have. So for this particular recipe, we're going to start with 160 grams. Of flour, okay. Or
and
about
this is what you did at home,
yeah, okay. Or about a cup,
okay,
and then to so 100 grams of water would be like 62% of
okay.
That, or 3/5 of a cup of water,
okay,
and then for the salt, you want to use 5 to 6 grams or just a good healthy pinch, okay. Whenever.
And what percentage of that is the whole? What should the salt percent be in the whole?
Like 3 to 4.
3 to 4%.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then your leavening agent, which in this recipe is like 15 grams.
Okay.
So, and I'll have all the percentages on the recipe for you online.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So what you want to do to get that started is once you've got everything measured out, I'm a big believer in, you know, having all your ingredients, you know, set up for when you're ready to start going. So once you've got everything measured out, you want to incorporate all your dry together. So put your salt in with your flour.
Okay. So these are crucial steps here. These are like
insider
tips of the trade.
Time to start listening. Take notes.
We hope you've been listening the whole time, but if you haven't.
This is the crucial stuff.
Okay, so you mix all your dries.
Yeah, so the salt.
Just hand mix them?
And yeah, just with, I just used for this recipe, just my hands for the whole thing.
Okay.
You know, if you have a KitchenAid mixer, good for you. Use it.
okay.
I'm impressed. So just combine those with your hands and then take the yeast and put it in with your water. And your water should be like tepid. Lukewarm.
Okay. A little warmer than room temperature.
Yeah.
Okay.
Throw your yeast into there and it will, if it's like the granulated active dry yeast, it'll dissolve. Same with the cake style, but you're probably not going to find a cake style yeast in your store, but it's the same animal pretty much. Okay. So that, once that's dissolved together, then you want to get your mixing bowl and slowly add in your flour to the water.
Okay.
And just kind of for 1 minute, just kind of incorporating it with your hands, just mixing it together lightly, just making sure it's all becomes one thing. And no more, you don't want to really, you're not really mixing it at this stage, you're just combining. So once it's combined and it's going to be like lumpy and it's going to be, it's not really going to feel like dough, it's not dough yet. So this stage, the resting from here to the time you mix is an autolyse, which is just another, it's like a baker's term for letting your dry and your wet kind of combine and soak in with each other. So after that 1 minute, leave it in your bowl, cover it if you can. It's not an important, super important step, but it is important to then leave it for 15 minutes.
Okay.
When you come back, you can either put it in your mixer for 6 minutes or just, I just kneaded it by hand, just mixed it together by hand, just have the ball in my hand and just kind of working it together like, you know, you would if you had like two different colors of Play-Doh and you wanted to be one color. That's basically what you're doing.
Very useful analogy.
Thank you. So that's going to be 6 minutes. You want to time yourself on this too. And you'll notice the difference from the time that you left it to when you come back. It was, you know, a bunch of ingredients mixed together. When you come back, it's dough and you can feel that it's dough.
When you come back from that, from the first minute.
Yeah. And so when you're mixing it, you'll feel that it's dough and it will start to come together. And at the end of that 6 minutes, you'll feel it's a one ball and take a little bit of your flour that you have and just kind of get it on your hands and shape it into a ball.
Okay.
And that's your pizza dough. That's your ball. So then you just put that in a bowl or like a piece of Tupperware, something that's going to have room for it to rise.
Okay.
Cover that up with Saran wrap and throw it in your refrigerator for ideally 7 to 8 hours. And you can leave it up to 24 hours is... You just, you know, everyone's temperature in their refrigerator is a little different. It's, you want to look at it. If bubbles start, like wart-looking bubbles start popping out, it's gone too long.
Okay, so keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And anything before 6 to 7 hours is maybe it's not going to be quite ready yet. But when you come back to it, it should have almost doubled in size. It's gotten quite...
So it's like the size of a softball, maybe a little bigger.
Yeah, like a grapefruit.
Okay.
And that's your pizza dough. That's going to be what you're going to put into the frying pan.
Okay. And now do I start preheating my oven?
Yeah, this is 7 hours later, 8 hours later, you're ready to eat pizza. Take your dough out of the refrigerator, preheat your oven, get your
skill. No pizza stone, just preheat it to 450.
You know, the thing about the pizza stone is every time I hear like a home pizza recipe and they're like, really, first thing you need to do is like go out there and get a pizza stone. And then that's the last step. No one's actually going to go. If you have a pizza stone at home, cook it on a pizza stone. It'll probably be pretty good. But don't go buy a pizza, especially don't go buy a pizza stone that's like designed to be a pizza stone, because it's just going to be like a piece of tile that you probably could have got at a hardware store or something right. like that. But I don't really think that's necessary. You're never going to duplicate what we do here at Roberta's in like a wood fired oven.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point in trying to like trick your oven out into being something that it's not, because right. you're not going to get that out of there. This is a perfectly acceptable way to make pizza in my eyes. And
uh-huh. Although you do have a trick for getting your oven temperature up, but we can't tell people that because of
there's trade
legal
secrets.
And liability concerns.
There are trade secrets.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you've got your basically your normal frying pan. Your oven's preheated.
Now, like 450.
You want to sort of put a coat of olive oil on your frying pan.
Yeah, just to cover, just coat it.
And you sort of squished your ball of dough. You made it into a wheel, sort of.
Yeah, flattened it out, but not really like, we don't want to roll it out with a rolling pan. I mean, I want to have like a like airy structure on the inside of your dough when you're done. And if you flatten all the, what you're doing is you're going to be flattening all the gas that's been building up in there when the yeast have been feeding on the flour. They've been burping out gas and creating holes in there. And so when you put it in the oven, that's going to expand, and that's what gives you that beautiful, like, fluffy, airy structure on the inside of bread.
Like the working man's slice here.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
One of my faves.
All right.
So that's... You don't want to overwork it. Just kind of shape it into the size of your frying pan and then plop it in there.
Okay.
And then just start going with topping it.
All right. So I throw the sauce on.
Mm-hmm.
I throw the cheese on. My oven's preheating to 450.
Mm-hmm.
I throw any toppings on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put it in the oven. And this is pretty much the final 5% of the whole operation.
Yeah. I mean, you're almost, you know...
Okay, so how long do I want to leave it in there? How do I know it's done? And how do I move it around in the oven depending on what's cooked more and what's cooked less? Like if the bottom is cooked more, I want to move it up in the oven, right?
So okay. There's a lot of factors that depend on what you're doing. So that I really encourage people to try it out and figure out what works for them. I would start by putting it in the middle rack and then checking after 15 minutes the bottom, and if the bottom is still white, then you're not getting enough heat on the bottom, so you want to move it to the lower rack. If the bottom is golden brown and cooked, then you want to, and the top is not quite, then you want to move it up higher, you know, vice versa. Just how, move it around in there, just realizing that the lower you put it, the bottom is going to be cooking more. You know, if you really...
Like the more ingredients you have on the top, it's going to affect how it's cooking. And
exactly.
The more sauce you put, the more cheese, etc.
Exactly.
Okay. So you're moving it up and down accordingly. And then how do we know if the inside is cooked? Like before I take it out?
The outside is going to basically tell you whether the inside is cooked or not.
Okay.
When you get to that, I mean, you really want to use your one of your best cooking tools. What I've found in the kitchen is your eyes. You really want to look and observe everything that's happening. And, you know, if the outside, it's only so thick. So if the outside is a nice golden brown, there's a good chance that the inside is, you know, going to be cooked all the way through.
Okay. All right. So I'm shifting it around up or down in my oven, and basically this is the kind of thing that I can only really learn by trying it myself and just by getting a feel for it.
Yeah.
But I want to let it sort of cook in the oven for at least 15 minutes before I start fiddling with it, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay.
I would pop it in there at 450 and give it just 15, unmolested, and then
okay.
Before you start messing
go
around.
Go molest something else while it's cooking.
That's definitely okay. The thing to do.
Okay. All right. So basically, so now, And that's about it. I mean, do you have anything else that you want to add? Like any little final secrets that you add to the pizza once it's done?
You know, some cheese, like a
Parmesan.
Yeah, like a hard cheese in the finish, and maybe a little olive oil on the top.
A little basil, maybe.
Yeah, a little basil's good.
Okay. All right.
Some herbs, any kind of. I mean, it doesn't have to be basil if you have some oregano, thyme. Like if you're doing a mushroom pizza, mushroom and thyme is a really good combination.
Okay.
You know, it's pizza is just a kind of bread, and you really shouldn't be like worried about, you know, being like strictly, you know, buffalo mozzarella and San Marzano tomatoes and basil. And we're not in Naples. You can do whatever you want. So just play around with it. And, you know, what I recommend is what's in your refrigerator. You know, I mean, really, like, to me, like, one of the foundations of Italian cooking is making do with what you have, the necessity of, like, what
stay
you have
local
around. Yeah, exactly.
stay within the boundaries of your kitchen
in the crisper.
Okay, so basically, if you guys need some more assistance, you can find a recipe handwritten by Anthony attached to this audio clip, and we'd like for you guys to try this at home and send us your responses at info@heritageradionetwork.com. Let us know what worked, what didn't work. Give us some more tips, some more ingredients.
We'll see pictures.
Yeah, we'll start a conversation. We'll start a dialogue about make at home frying pan pizza, which I'll go on a limb and say that there aren't any of those on the internet yet.
Yeah, we're going to start. This is going to be a new craze, frying pan pizza. Yum.
Awesome. And then if you want to try the real thing, come down to Roberta's and Anthony will hand molest a pizza for you, prepare it, and I think you'll be quite thrilled. So that was the second installment of our Heritage How-To's. Check back every week for a new artisan talking about their craft, explaining how to do it. And this is going to be a new platform for the do-it-yourself generation. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Lorenzo.
Thanks, Anthony.
Appreciate
it. Keep up the good work.
All right.